I do not mean that he should tell her to her face or do it in any rude public manner, but let him contrive the most civil, secret, friendly way that he can think of, only to let her know his opinion that he thinks she is neither handsome nor dresses well nor becomes her finery, and I dare say he will find there are but very few finely dressed women that will like him never the worse for his bare opinion, though known to none but themselves, and that he will not be long without seeing the effects of their resentment. But if such an experiment would show him that there are but few such women that could bear with his friendship, after they knew he had such an opinion of them, surely it is time to complain of and accuse that education which so generally corrupts their hearts. For though it is hard to judge of the hearts of people, yet where they declare their resentment and uneasiness at anything, there they pass the judgment upon themselves. If a woman cannot forgive a man who thinks she has no beauty nor any ornament from her dress, there she infallibly discovers the state of her own heart and is condemned by her own and not another's judgment. For we never are angry at others but when their opinions of us are contrary to that which we have of ourselves. A man that makes no pretenses to scholarship is never angry at those that do not take him to be a scholar. So if a woman had no opinion of her own person and dress, she should never be angry at those who are of the same opinion with herself. So that the general bad effects of this education are too much known to admit of any reasonable doubt. But how possible it is to bring up daughters in the more excellent way, let the following character declare. Eusebia, footnote 4. Eusebius, pious in the ecclesiastical sense, as the name of the first church historian, but without reference to that historian's character. In the female, it would be Eusebia. Eusebia is a pious widow, well-born and well-bred, and has a good estate for 5 daughters, whom she brings up as one entrusted by God to fit 5 virgins for the kingdom of heaven. Her family has the same regulation as a religious house, and all its orders tend to the support of a constant regular devotion. She, her daughters, and her maids meet together at all the hours of prayer in the day, and chant psalms and other devotions, and spend the rest of their time in such good works and innocent diversions as render them fit to return to their psalms and prayers. She loves them as her spiritual children, and they reverence her as their spiritual mother, with an affection far above that of the fondest friends. She has divided part of her estate amongst them, that everyone may be charitable out of her own stock, and each of them takes it in her turn to provide for the poor and sick of the parish. Eusebia brings them up to all kinds of labor that are proper for women, as sewing, knitting, spinning, and all other parts of housewifery, not for their amusement, but that they may be serviceable to themselves and others, and be saved from those temptations which attend an idle life. She tells them she had rather see them reduced to the necessity of maintaining themselves by their own work than to have riches to excuse themselves from labor. For though, says she, you may be able to assist the poor without your labor, yet by your labor you will be able to assist them more. If Eusebia has lived as free from sin as it is possible for human nature, it is because she is always watching and guarding against all instances of pride. And if her virtues are stronger and higher than other people's, it is because they are all founded in a deep humility. My children, says she, when their father died, I was much pitied by my friends as having all the care of a family and the management of an estate fallen upon me. But my own grief was founded upon another principle. I was grieved to see myself deprived of so faithful a friend, and that such an eminent example of Christian virtues should be taken from the eyes of his children before they were of an age to love and follow it. But as to worldly cares which my friends thought so heavy upon me, they are most of them of their own making, and fall away as soon as we know ourselves. If a person in a dream is disturbed with strange appearances, his trouble is over as soon as he is awake and sees that it was the folly of a dream. Now, when a right knowledge of ourselves enters into our minds, it makes as great change in all our thoughts and apprehensions as when we awake from the wanderings of a dream. We acknowledge a man to be mad or melancholy who fancies himself to be a glass, and so is afraid of stirring or taking himself to be wax, dare not let the sun shine upon him. But, my children, there are things in the world which pass for wisdom, politeness, grandeur, happiness, and fine breeding, which show as great ignorance of ourselves and might as justly pass for thorough madness as when a man fancies himself to be glass or ice. A woman that dares not appear in the world without fine clothes, that thinks it a happiness to have a face finely colored, to have a skin delicately fair, that had rather die than be reduced to poverty and be forced to work for a poor maintenance, is as ignorant of herself to the full as he that fancies himself to be glass. For this reason, all my discourse with you has been to acquaint you with yourselves and to accustom you to such books and devotions as may best instruct you to this greatest of all knowledge. You would think it hard not to know the family into which you were born, what ancestors you were descended from, and what estate was to come to you. But, my children, you may know all this with exactness, and yet be as ignorant of yourselves as he that takes himself to be wax. For though you were all of you born of my body and bear your father's name, yet you are all of you pure spirits. I do not mean that you have not bodies that want meat and drink and sleep and clothing, but that all that deserves to be called you is nothing else but spirit. A being spiritual and rational in its nature, that is as contrary to all fleshly or corporeal beings as life is contrary to death. That is made in the image of God to live forever, never to cease any more, but to enjoy life and reason and knowledge and happiness in the presence of God and the society of angels and glorious spirits to all eternity. Everything that you call yours besides this spirit is but like your clothing, something that is only to be used for a while, and then to end, and die, and wear away, and to signify no more to you than the clothing and bodies of other people. But, my children, you are not only in this manner spirits, but you are fallen spirits, that began your life in a state of corruption and disorder, full of tempers and passions that blind and darken the reason of your mind, and incline you to that which is hurtful. Your bodies are not only poor and perishing like your clothes, but they are like infected clothes that fill you with ill diseases and distempers, which oppress the soul with sickly appetites and vain cravings. So that all of us are like two beings that have, as it were, two hearts within us. With the one we see and taste and admire reason, purity, and holiness. With the other we incline to pride and vanity and sensual delights. This internal war we always feel within us more or less, and if you would know the one thing necessary to all the world, it is this, to preserve and perfect all that is rational, holy, and divine in our nature, and to mortify, remove, and destroy all that vanity, pride, and sensuality which springs from the corruption of our state. Could you think, my children, when you look at the world and see what customs and fashions and pleasures and troubles and projects and tempers employ the hearts and time of mankind, that things were thus as I have told you? But do not you be affected at these things. The world is in a great dream, and but few people are awake in it. We fancy that we fall into darkness when we die. But alas, we are most of us in the dark till then, and the eyes of our souls only then begin to see when our bodily eyes are closing. You see then your state, my children. You are to honor, improve, and perfect the spirit that is within you. You are to prepare it for the kingdom of heaven, to nourish it with the love of God and of virtue, to adorn it with good works, and to make it as holy and heavenly as you can. You are to preserve it from errors and vanities of the world, to save it from the corruptions of the body, from those false delights and sensual tempers which the body tempts it with. You are to nourish your spirits with pious readings and holy meditations, with watchings, fastings, and prayers, that you may taste and relish and desire that eternal state, which is to begin when this life ends. As to your bodies, you are to consider them as poor, perishing things that are sickly and corrupt at present, and will soon drop into common dust. You are to watch over them as enemies that are always trying to tempt and betray you, and so never follow their advice and counsel. You are to consider them at the place and habitation of your souls, and so keep them pure and clean and decent. You are to consider them as the servants and instruments of action, and so give them food and rest and raiment, that they may be strong and healthful to do the duties of a charitable, useful, pious life. Whilst you live thus, you live like yourselves, and whenever you have less regard to your souls or more regard to your bodies than this comes to, whenever you are more intent upon adorning your persons than upon the perfecting of your souls, you are much more besides yourself than he that had rather have a laced coat than a healthful body. For this reason, my children, I have taught you nothing that was dangerous for you to learn. I have kept you from everything that might betray you into weakness and folly, or make you think anything fine but a fine mind, anything happy but the favor of God, or anything desirable but to do all the good you possibly can. Instead of the vain, immodest entertainment of plays and operas, I have taught you to delight in visiting the sick and poor. What music and dancing and diversions are to many in the world, that prayers and devotions and psalms are to you. Your hands have not been employed in plaiting the hair and adorning your persons, but in making clothes for the naked. You have not wasted your fortunes upon yourself, but have added your labor to them to do more good to other people. Instead of forced shapes, patched faces, genteel airs, and affected motions, I have taught you to conceal your bodies with modest garments, and let the world have nothing to view of you, but the plainness, the sincerity, and humility of all your behavior. You know, my children, the high perfection and the great rewards of virginity. You know how it frees from worldly cares and troubles, and furnishes means and opportunities of higher advancements in a divine life. Therefore, love and esteem and honor virginity. Bless God for all that glorious company of holy virgins that from the beginning of Christianity have, in the several ages of the Church, renounced the cares and pleasures of matrimony to be perpetual examples of solitude, contemplation, and prayer. But as every one has his proper gift from God, as I look upon you all to be so many great blessings of a married state, so I leave it to your choice, either to do as I have done, or to aspire after higher degrees of perfection in a virgin state of life. I desire nothing, I press nothing upon you, but to make the most of human life, and to aspire after perfection in whatever state of life you choose. Never, therefore, consider yourselves as persons that are to be seen, admired, and courted by men, but as poor sinners that are to save yourselves from the vanities and follies of a miserable world by humility, devotion, and self-denial. Learn to live for your own sakes in the service of God, and let nothing in the world be of any value with you but that which you can turn into a service to God and a means of your future happiness. Consider often how powerfully you are called to a virtuous life, and what great and glorious things God has done for you, to make you in love with everything that can promote his glory. Think upon the vanity and shortness of human life, and let death and eternity be often in your minds, for these thoughts will strengthen and exalt your minds, make you wise and judicious, and truly sensible of the littleness of all human things. Think of the happiness of prophets and apostles, saints and martyrs, who are now rejoicing in the presence of God, and see themselves possessors of eternal glory. And then think how desirable a thing it is to watch and pray and do good as they did, that when you die you may have your lot amongst them. Whether married, therefore, or unmarried, consider yourselves as mothers and sisters, as friends and relations to all that want your assistance, and never allow yourselves to be idle whilst others are in want of anything that your hands can make for them. This useful, charitable, humble employment of yourselves is what I recommend to you with great earnestness, as being a substantial part of a wise and pious life. And besides the good you will thereby do to other people, every virtue of your own heart will be very much improved by it. For next to reading, meditation, and prayer, there is nothing that so secures our hearts from foolish passions, nothing that preserves so holy and wise a frame of mind, as some useful, humble employment of ourselves. Never, therefore, consider your labor as an amusement, that is, to get rid of your time, and so may be as trifling as you please, but consider it as something that is to be serviceable to ourselves and others, that is, to serve some sober ends of life, to save and redeem your time, and make it turn to your account when the works of all people shall be tried by fire. When you were little, I left you to little amusements, to please yourselves in any things that were free from harm. But as you are now grown up to a knowledge of God and yourselves, as your minds are now acquainted with the worth and value of virtue, and exalted with the great doctrines of religion, you are now to do nothing as children, but despise everything that is poor or vain or impertinent. You are now to make the labors of your hands suitable to the piety of your hearts, and employ themselves for the same ends, and with the same spirit as you watch and pray. For if there is any good to be done by your labor, if you can possibly employ yourselves usefully to other people, how silly is it, how contrary to the wisdom of religion, to make that a mere amusement, which might as easily be made an exercise of the greatest charity. What would you think of the wisdom of him that should employ his time in distilling of waters and making liquors which nobody could use, merely to amuse himself with the variety of their color and clearness, when with less labor and expense he might satisfy the wants of those who have nothing to drink? Yet he would be as wisely employed as those that are amusing themselves with such tedious works as they neither need nor hardly know how to use when they are finished. When with less labor and expense they might be doing as much good as he that is clothing the naked or visiting the sick. Be glad, therefore, to know the wants of the poorest people, and let your hands be employed in making such mean and ordinary things for them as their necessities require. By thus making your labor a gift and service to the poor, your ordinary work will be changed into a holy service and made as acceptable to God as your devotions. And as charity is the greatest of all virtues, as it always was the chief temper of the greatest saints, so nothing can make your own charity more amiable in the sight of God than this method of adding your labor to it. The humility also of this employment will be as beneficial to you as the charity of it. It will keep you from all vain and proud thoughts of your own state and distinction in life, and from treating the poor as creatures of a different species. By accustoming yourselves to this labor and service for the poor, as the representatives of Jesus Christ, you will soon find your heart softened into the greatest meekness and lowliness towards them. You will reverence their state and condition, think it an honor to serve them, and never be so pleased with yourself as when you are most humbly employed in their service. This will make you true disciples of your meek Lord and Master, who came into the world not to be ministered unto, but to minister. And though he was Lord of all, and amongst the creatures of his own making, yet was amongst them as one that serveth. Christianity has then had its most glorious effects upon your hearts, when it has thus changed your